Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We are here on case 12-1861, the State of Ohio versus Timothy Tate. For the appellant, we have Mr. Price.
Good morning, Chief Justice O'Connor. May it please the court, my name is James Price, Assistant Prosecutor for the appellant, Cuyahoga County and the State of Ohio. I would like to reserve 2 minutes.
All right, can you speak up into the microphone?
Yes, please. Your Honor, I sure
Thank
can.
You.
In this case, Mr. Tate appealed his conviction for domestic violence, felony domestic violence, arguing that his trial counsel provided ineffective assistance. The 8th District Court of Appeals overruled Mr. Tate's assignment of error. However, despite a stipulation to two previous convictions, concluded sua sponte, that the trial court committed plain error in its judgment of conviction because the element of Mr. Tate's identity relative to those two prior convictions.
Counsel, we're having a little difficulty. Would you move the microphone maybe a little bit up closer to your mouth? Thank you.
Because Mr. Tate said that the issue of identity relative to his two prior domestic violence convictions had not been proven. That decision was not unanimous, however. In a dissent, Judge Celebrez wrote that while he agreed that RC 294575B required the state to provide evidence that the defendant named in the prior judgment was the defendant in the case at bar, he would find that, whereas in this case, a defendant stipulates to the authenticity of his previous convictions, it is inherent that the defendant is equally stipulating to the fact that he is the same party named in the prior conviction.
Counsel, doesn't this get down to a real question? Is a stipulation a fact?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe according to the rules of evidence, specifically Rule 901, when a party stipulates to a document, for example, in this case, or to a fact, that party is setting that forth before the court for the court to examine and determine whether it is authentic, it can be identified, and if that's the case, I believe that the court is satisfied as to its admissibility. That's sufficient to support a finding that the matter in question is what the proponent claims. So,
Counsel, you didn't try this case, did you?
No, Your Honor, I did not.
And the problem here seems from what limited and the Court of Appeals raised this issue on its own, right?
That's correct.
The appeal was about ineffective assistance of counsel, and when they finished that and said his counsel was effective, then they dealt with this issue of two things being required, and that flows out of a case from Cuyahoga County, right, in the 8th
correct.
District.
Correct.
They had a prior case of which the prosecutors should have been aware of that two things. Not only do you have to authenticate the record of the prior conviction, but you have to establish that the person named is, in fact, the person in court, right?
And I believe that's correct.
And that's your 8th District Court of Appeals. And here's what happened, according to what you put in the brief. Your Honor, I have a certified copy from Franklin County Municipal Court of the defendant's two prior first-degree misdemeanor domestic violence convictions, and there's a stipulation. The court, you stipulate to the authenticity, and the defense counsel, yes, sir. Okay, that will be noted from the court.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's it. And so there is no stipulation there that this defendant that's sitting there in the courtroom is, in fact, the same person that is named in the authenticated copies of the prior convictions. And it isn't like the defense counsel wasn't thinking about this, because as soon as the state rested, he moved for a dismissal based on the failure to establish that the guy in the courtroom is the same guy mentioned in the authenticated prior convictions. So he was planning on it.
Yes, Your Honor, but he discussed throughout the proceedings that he was aware.
Well, in voir dire, they were picking the jury.
But what we're looking at is what the defense counsel was thinking.
If he says in picking the jury, to the jurors, are you willing to accept the fact that my client has two prior convictions, but not use that as to establishing his character? The question's along those lines in voir dire. Is that binding, questions in voir dire, is that evidence?
I think what that is evidence.
Is it like an opening?
What defense counsel was actually thinking, because defense counsel actually said on page 30 of the transcript, when he was discussing this issue with potential juror, he said, I have only one issue that I need to bring up. Part of the case of the state's in chief is the indictment, is that you'll learn that Mr. Tate has been previously convicted of two domestic violence
cases. And he says that where? In what part of the
trial? Page 130.
No, what stage of the trial?
He's speaking to a potential juror.
That's voir dire?
Yes.
Okay, now, yes. If he said that in opening statement, we have some case law that says you're bound by that, right, in opening statements.
Yes.
Do we have any case law that says if you say it when you're picking the jury before you get to opening statements?
I don't have any case law that says that.
That you're bound by what you say while you're picking a jury.
I don't have any case law that says that. But
we have to find that for you to prevail.
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think what we need to look at is the case in total and see what the parties thought, what they thought they were stipulating to.
Well, we can't divine what the parties thought from the record.
I think we can from this particular passage.
Because of the question in the voir dire, if you find that my client has two previous, which you will by the virtue of the indictment, are you going to hold that against him? That's basically what he was asking, correct?
Yes, basically, but in asking it, he said he made an affirmative statement.
Okay,
you'll
but,
learn
but
that Mr. Tate has.
Do we bind the defendants by what questions and hypotheticals, et cetera, that are utilized when picking a jury?
If this is
an admission?
It was not couched in terms of a hypothetical.
Okay,
he was giving the juror information. Then there was an interruption, and he came back and said to the same juror, again, you'll learn directly from the state's case that Mr. Tate has been previously convicted of two domestic violence cases.
But counsel, doesn't that just go back to almost elementary law that what lawyers say is not evidence? That's where I'm getting on my first question. Is a stipulation evidence? Is what a lawyer say evidence? Because you have a burden. You have a burden to prove the two prior domestic violence convictions and the identity of the person in the documents. Do you not?
I do not believe that you do if you have a stipulation. I think in the absence of a stipulation, you do have to follow 294575. However, where there's a stipulation, unless that stipulating party actually informs the trial court that this is a limited stipulation.
So, counsel, the statement from the judge was, you stipulate to the authenticity. Isn't the question for us, what does that mean? What is authenticity?
I think it is, and that's where I think the court has to go back and look at the evidentiary rules, specifically Rule 901.
Well, that talks about authentication
and the, identification.
Whether evidence will be in or not. But here, when you say authenticity, we're talking about the document is what it purports to be. The document purports to be a prior conviction of someone named Mr. Tate.
However,
don't we have to, I mean, the argument is that there has to be that additional leap of saying that the person named in this piece of paper is the same person that's in front of the court at the time.
I think that the court's description was inartful.
Well, it says authenticity.
By saying authenticity, because it's a confusing term.
Well, if he hadn't stipulated, if the defense counsel had not stipulated to the authenticity of the document, what would have happened then?
The state would have gone forward to prove that the two convictions applied to Mr. Tate pursuant to 2945-75.
Okay, and how would you have done that?
We would have had to have produced certified journal entries. And in addition to that, we'd have to provide sufficient evidence to show that that journal entry that certified entry applied to Mr. Tate.
Okay.
Now, in this case, however, I'm sorry, in this case, one of the problems I see is that the 8th District has couched it in terms of this is the only way to establish that an individual has two prior convictions.
All right. You said that had they not stipulated to the document, you would have had to go through the testimony, putting someone on the stand to identify that, presumably from the clerk of court's office?
Yes.
That this is a document that was created from our files. That's the seal on the document. This is an authentic copy. And this relates to the crime of domestic violence committed by someone named Timothy Tate.
Correct.
Okay. You would then, that wouldn't have been enough to link it to Mr. Tate at that point. You would have had to say, by some other means of eliciting the testimony, is Mr. Tate here in the courtroom today? Correct?
Yes.
Okay. But you're saying by
virtue... You have to go further.
Pardon
and
me?
You would have to go further and establish, because it was established that Mr. Tate was in the courtroom, and I would argue that it was also established that by
it's
sufficient evidence
Tate,
that he was the same Tate,
okay.
Because it was the same victim, he
right.
was involved
so
with the mother at the
same
time.
You would have to have testimony to link Mr. Tate to that authenticated document.
That's correct.
All right. And so you're saying, by virtue of the fact that the defense attorney identified that document as being a true copy of what's on file down the hall in the clerk's office, that also takes care of that second burden of linking or identifying Mr. Tate as the Mr. Tate that was in the document.
Yes, if the only thing that the prosecutor had offered the court was said, I've got a journal entry that's got Mr. Tate's name on it, shows two prior convictions. But in this case, the prosecutor said, Your Honor, I have a certified copy from Franklin County Municipal Court of the defendant's two prior first-degree misdemeanor domestic violence convictions, and there's a stipulation. The court said, you stipulate to the authenticity, and Mr. Klopp said, yes, sir.
But then the court did not say you stipulate that Timothy Tate listed on this conviction is the same Timothy Tate in front of me.
No.
And
no.
That's what's missing.
But what was entered into the record prior to that was the statement of the prosecutor that it is the defendant's two prior convictions.
But it wasn't the defense counsel who said that.
But what... Oh, She is representing to the court that that's what this document says, okay? For a stipulation, there didn't have to be any journal entry, right? I think I'm correct there. I mean, it could have been on a gum wrapper.
The trouble comes with the judge's question, and the judge is sitting in the 8th District, presumably should have known that the 8th District had this case out there that the Court of Appeals relied on, saying you've got to do both. And our common understanding of you stipulate to the authenticity would refer to the fact that we're not going to make you show that this is a certified copy. You're just stipulating that it is a certified copy.
And the case we're talking about is McCullough, is that right?
Yeah. That's the one they talk about.
Correct. However, in McCullough, there was no stipulation. So, as Chief Justice O'Connor said,
well, here's a
yes,
philosophical.
They did have to prove both of those elements. To go through the whole analysis.
Counsel, as we think about this, I know for me, when I first read it, I'm going, this is really nitpicking. And my first reaction was, well, the state should just prevail. But then I reflected on what this court has done over a substantial period of time over the last decade, and that is overturn conviction after conviction and send them back for resentencing because the trial court didn't follow the law precisely in sentencing, whether they forgot to spell out the terms of post-release control or whether they forgot to put it's a jury verdict. You know all the cases, and we have been very prickly about that.
Yes, Your Honor.
And require precision. So why shouldn't we do it here?
I think we should require precision. But the precision that should be required is that a defendant who wishes to make a partial stipulation should inform the court that this is a limited stipulation. I'm not stipulating to identity. When an individual enters a stipulation, they're stipulating not only to the four corners of the document, they're stipulating to its relevance. Otherwise, it's superfluous.
But it didn't say stipulation to relevance. It only said to authenticity.
And that's right,
authenticity means the document is what it purports to be. So the idea of identity is missing here. It seems that we don't have that extra step taken by the court or by the defense counsel.
The rule does say that the document, the rule does not say that it's what the document purports to be. The rule says that the document is what the proponent purports the document to be.
So the proponent, by using the identifier, if the proponent is using the identifier in the proffer to the court by saying the defendant's two prior convictions, which she clearly used the word modifier, defendant's two prior convictions.
Correct.
And then you have to take that into consideration, and it modifies the conversation between the statement of the court and defense counsel stipulating to the authenticity. And you're saying that authenticity is an all-encompassing phrase that not only are you stipulating to the document, you're just stipulating to what the defendant or the prosecutor intended to use the document for.
Exactly, and that's what the rule says.
Well, the statute, 2945.75b1, says whenever in any case it is necessary to prove a prior conviction, a certified copy of the entry of judgment in such prior conviction, together with evidence sufficient to identify the defendant named in the entry as the offender in the case at bar, is sufficient to prove such prior conviction. And what you want to say is the proffer by the prosecutor of modifying the two prior convictions with the term defendants to prior convictions satisfies 294575B1?
No, Your Honor, not exactly. I don't want to interfere. I don't have any problem with the statute as it's written. What I am saying is that when an individual enters a stipulation, it obviates the need to go through that process. There's no need to go through, and there's no need
just
to show
you
a journal entry.
Okay. All right.
I'm sorry.
I think you've used your time right now.
Okay.
Just
thank
say
you.
Yes. It'll be fine.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. We have Mr. Fortunato first.
Good morning, Madam Chief Justice and the Associate Justices of the Court. May it please the Court, I am Christopher Fortunato, counsel for the appellee. I would ask if my learned amicus may have 5 minutes of the 15 minutes that are afforded the appellee in this proceeding. I would also like to thank the Court for appointing me to represent the appellee's interests here, and I hope that our presentations this morning will be inspirational to hopefully future members of the Crawford County Bar.
Counsel, let me ask you a question following Justice Pfeiffer. Kind of looks like it's nitpicking here. You got a certified copy, and why is this not invited error by defense counsel? They're just saying, we got you this time.
Well, I would a dispute, Your Honor, that this wasn't a certified copy. What went into evidence was a faxed copy, not a certified copy with a raised seal, as the way I, or at least the way I have seen this. But in terms of invited error in this matter, I don't look at this as.
Well, let me stop you there. That's something new I haven't heard here. Because I'm looking at the record and it says, Your Honor, I have a certified copy from Franklin County Municipal Court. You're saying that's inaccurate?
I believe it is, Your Honor. From looking at the record, what it was a faxed over copy based on our research. Now, I'm...
Was that an error here before us?
I mean, a non-certified copy.
Was that to the appellate court? And are we to consider that on any proposition here?
I think the court can, yes. I think that that could be a portion of an error. I mean, generally you use something with a raised seal to that effect, but this being a stipulation, the issue may be just slightly different on that. I mean, that you may not have to go the full 2945 route with regard to that issue. If I may go back to what Justice O'Neill said with the court's permission on that about, I don't believe it is invited error. I think it was error simply on the part of the state in terms of their stipulation.
Wasn't it defense counsel who actually brought it up? If we go just a couple of lines above from where Justice Pfeiffer started us out on, where it says the court, so there's a stipulation that needs to be dealt with, Mr. Klopp, who's defense counsel, correct? Two prior convictions. So he didn't bring it up as whether it's a certified copy, he didn't bring it up as authenticity, he brought it up as a stipulation for two prior convictions. So why don't we consider that in our analysis of what was really intended to be stipulated to?
Well, because I think the trial court framed it in terms of what the stipulation was.
So it doesn't matter how the defense counsel introduces it. It only depends on how the trial court speaks to, so this is what you're stipulating? It says you stipulate to the authenticity?
Yes, I do. I think that how the trial court couched it would be the way that it has to be accepted.
Well, then let's go down to the exhibits, where that was exhibit number one. Whether it was a certified copy or not, it was a copy of a conviction record. And it's the prosecutor who says, it refers to exhibit number one, and we expect it to be submitted. The state rests, we get to the presentation of the exhibits, and prosecutor says that would be exhibit number one, the conviction. No objections at that point. Why isn't that, at a minimum, why wouldn't that be a waiver at that point? He said this is a, we're bringing in this evidence as to two prior convictions. There's an exhibit that everybody knows is the conviction, and he has no objection at that point. Isn't that another opportunity where defense counsel could have said, that's not what we're stipulating to?
Well, I think that trial counsel probably agreed with the court way back when he said that, you know, the trial court limited the matter to authenticity and probably relied on it there. I agree with you, Your Honor, that it probably would have been better practice if trial counsel had been, had objected at that time, but he didn't, and that's what I have to work with.
If we have to look at language, for example, that passage where we have the statements by defense counsel, statements by the court, statements by the prosecutor, what's our standard of review? If we have to look at, do these words mean what the trial court thinks they mean? The trial court thought there had been a stipulation as to the convictions. So is that a question of fact that we review at that point and see if maybe the court abused its discretion in deciding that the words that the lawyers were saying actually stipulated only to authenticity as opposed to identity?
Well, I think the court is probably on review, it has to look at what the Court of Appeals below ruled on in terms of the finding in that, and there the standard review was plain error. Now, I don't think that abuse of discretion would necessarily have to be needed at this juncture for that type of review.
The Court of Appeals looked at it for plain error, which is even harder than abuse of discretion. So tell me why this satisfies plain error that they raised sua sponte.
Well, I think it does because the fact is that the stipulation was only to authenticity and not to identity of the appellee. And as a result, the stipulation in some ways is a concession on the part of this case, the appellee, indicating that there was this case involving the defendant and that it prevented the state from having to bring in a deputy clerk for a 300-mile round trip. That would be the only concession that this kind of stipulation would
counsel. Is this analogous to a medical record that comes in and the people say, I will stipulate as to the authenticity of that record, but I am not stipulating as to what is said on that record?
Yes. I think that is a good analogy, Your Honor.
But then the defense counsel did not present a limited stipulation. Defense counsel did not say, Your Honor, we do not stipulate to identity.
Right.
And if you look at what opposing counsel presented to us in argument regarding Rule 901, when the proponent claims that a document is a certain thing, and in this particular case, the state did say, these are defendant's prior convictions, this is a copy, then the court says, do you stipulate to the authenticity? Don't we have the stipulation that covers the whole matter?
No, I don't believe you do, Your Honor. I think what you have is you just simply have an authentication issue as to that document being a document that is held in the regular course and scope of the Franklin County Municipal Court.
So your position is the trial court should have added another question there saying, do you then stipulate to the identity being the same?
Yes, I do, and I believe because if you do not, this could create very bad policy for future cases.
Counsel, you've used your time, and if Mr. Martin wants to have any time.
Right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
May it please the court, John Martin on behalf of the amicus, and I thank the court for its indulgence in allowing me to argue on behalf of the amicus. This case is not a case of invited error. This case is a simple application of a couple of evidentiary rules. Evidence Rule 901 tells us that evidence is authentic when there is sufficient evidence that it is what it purports to be, that it is what it looks to be on its face. And 902...
What its proponent claims. It is what its proponent claims. That's a difference.
Yes, Your Honor. And yes, Your Honor, and it is what its proponent claims. Now, Evidence Rule 902 says that if you have a certified copy of a prior conviction, you don't even need the clerk to come in. You take that certified copy, the judge looks at it, sees the raised seal on it, sometimes you even get a red ribbon, and the judge looks at it and says, this is self-authenticating, it's admitted. When I tried cases, I would say, Your Honor, we're moving Exhibit 1, it's self-authenticating. That was the end of the discussion. They did not have a self-authenticating certified copy in this case. They had a fax that had been sent to them from Franklin County. So that's number one. I reviewed State's Exhibit 1 in the court's file.
Well, but probably in the normal course of things, Mr. Martin, the prosecutor and the defense attorney would have had a discussion and said, is a fax going to be okay? And this is outside of the courtroom, and as a matter of collegiality and as a matter of not continuing this case to another day, said, fine, we'll go into court, and I won't make you get the certified copy. And that might have been done a week ahead, even.
Precisely. And if that is the precursor, as it normally happens or oftentimes happens, that's the precursor to the colloquy on page 5 of the transcript. We have a stipulation as to, and the prosecutor uses the term the defendant's prior convictions.
But Justice French points out, you do have the problematic two prior convictions out of defense counsel.
The defense counsel saying, I'm stipulating to two prior convictions. The defense counsel does not say my client's two prior convictions. He simply says two prior convictions. The prosecutor adds the word defendants. The judge steps in, says a stipulation as to authenticity, a term, by the way, that means not what the judge thinks it means, a term that means what 2945.74 says, and in the 8th District, an 8th District judge, as well as an 8th District prosecutor who's standing right there in court, hears the words authenticity. That's a term of art. Words don't mean what we say they mean. Words mean how they're defined by the statute. And that word, authenticity, only gets you halfway under 2945.74.
If you take it out of context, I would agree with you. If it was not put in the context of the discussion on the record where there's a stipulation that needs to be dealt with, two prior convictions, Your Honor, according to the prosecutor, I have a certified copy of from Franklin County Municipal Court of the defendant's two prior first-degree misdemeanor domestic violence convictions, and there's a stipulation. The court, you stipulate to the authenticity? Yes, sir, says the defense attorney. Don't you have to take that whole conversation in context and not just tease out, you stipulate to the authenticity, and you only want to say to the that these are certified copies of a conviction?
Your Honor, a stipulation is, the answer to your question is no. Yes, you do tease out, if you will. Yes, because what you're doing is not teasing out, but you're making a distinction based on legal terms. It was the prosecutor's responsibility, standing right there in that courtroom, who hears the words authenticity, to follow up and say, do I have a stipulation as to identity as well? And it is not a situation either where, and we dispute the state when they call this gamesmanship, That stipulation as to authenticity was a real concession, a real shortcut in proof, which is what a stipulation is. Because that stipulation was a concession that this was just as good as the copy that would have had the seal on it, which, by the way, they don't have. And so you make one concession. If I concede, for example, or if I stipulate, for example, that my client's that my client was found with within 1,000 feet of a school in a drug case, that doesn't mean I've also stipulated that the school was in Cuyahoga County or Franklin County or whatever. Stipulations as shortcuts to proof, particularly in a criminal case where a criminal defendant with that Fifth Amendment right to put on no evidence at all. When the defendant gives up that Fifth Amendment right, this court and the U.S. Supreme Court has always recognized that concessions of constitutional rights, including, in this case, that concession that I will not make them prove that their case to this extent, concessions are always strictly construed against the state.
But when it is then referred to later, when the state begins calling witnesses and says, I know we stipulated to the conviction, it is exhibit number one, which is the stipulated entries, and we expect it to be submitted, okay? And there's no objection to that.
And there shouldn't have been. There should not have been.
As a trial tactic?
No. I'll tell you, the reason why is this. A brick, when it comes to evidence, all right, and the admissibility of evidence, a brick is not a wall. Exhibit one is relevant because it does help and advance the inquiry under Evidence Rule 401. It should have been admitted. The problem is, in this case, it was not sufficient in and of itself. And so when defense counsel says, I'm not objecting to the admissibility of that exhibit, but I am objecting to the sufficiency of the evidence, that's a distinction. If, for example, there had been no stipulation in this case.
Well, let me ask you a question before you get to that, because you're almost out of time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The court's question is inartful. It says you stipulate to the authenticity. What, in your view, did the court mean by the authenticity of what?
The precursor was, Your Honor, I have a certified copy.
Oh, I know we've read it six times, but I'm trying to understand your position as to what it is.
Authenticity.
The court says you stipulate to the authenticity, and what I want to know from you is, what do you think the court meant by authenticity of what?
Authenticity of a document.
Of a document.
That
not
document.
With reference to what the prosecutor said of the defendant's two prior misdemeanor domestic violence conviction.
That's correct, because if you are stipulating to your client's prior convictions, then you're not stipulating to authenticity, you're stipulating to accuracy. Authenticity is a term of art defined not only by statute,
right,
but
I've
also
heard your argument.
What about
on that?
What isn't part of the reason for the stipulation to avoid having this information go to the jury?
No.
That is not part of the reason for the stipulation here.
No, because it's
because
not,
you still would have had the identity questions come out in front of the jury.
And you still have to prove the prior convictions. You know, just because something
Wait
is
a minute, didn't the jury instructions say there is going to be this evidence of the two prior convictions, you're not to use it for purposes of character?
Yes, Your Honor.
So isn't that, in terms of it going to the jury, you're not giving the jury the question about whether he had been convicted, but that you shouldn't use it for other purposes? Am I getting that wrong?
Your Honor, the court, and I believe it was at 210 and 211 of the jury instructions in the transcript, that it talks about you've heard evidence of the defendant's prior convictions. You cannot use that for any other purpose. You have to give that kind of limiting instruction, but giving that kind of limiting instruction, and when the defense asks for a limiting instruction, that doesn't mean they're conceding the legal issue with respect to this.
But it says defendant's prior convictions, not just you've heard evidence of convictions. I mean, that goes against your argument earlier that we're not linking this to the defendant.
Your Honor, keep in mind that at that point in the case, all right, defense counsel has already staked out their position. We shouldn't even be here anymore. This case should not be in front of the jury. The judge has already overruled counsel in that regard, all right? When, if there had been no stipulation in this case and the state had been bringing in its evidence, they would have given that same jury instruction because it was in the context, and jury instructions are to be taken in their total context, in the context of the fact that there is a dispute about, there is a dispute about identity, but the fact of the matter is that beyond that, a trial judge has to be worried about the fact that, assuming they find the identity, I still don't want that prejudicial spillover of prior convictions means he must have committed the crime
but,
in this
but
case.
But really, was there a dispute about identity here?
Yes.
I mean, really, was there a dispute when you have that language that the defense counsel saying defendant's prior convictions? And here, it wasn't even, at the Court of Appeals, it wasn't even listed as an assignment of error. It was the Court of Appeals that sua sponte brought this up.
And two aspects to that and that I want to address, because one goes back to Justice French's question before. Mm-hmm. Number one, that not guilty verdict or that not guilty plea in and of itself puts into dispute each and every element of an offense. Indeed, in a criminal case, even stipulated evidence still has to be considered by a jury and found beyond a reasonable doubt.
Was there an argument made to the jury by defense attorney that my client has never been linked to the two prior convictions?
There was argument that they did not prove that link, yes.
So he did argue that to the jury?
Yes, Your Honor, he did in closing argument.
Okay.
Now, to go back to the issue of the Eighth District finding plain error.
Please.
The Eighth District, as with all district courts of appeals in Ohio, plenary courts of first review, search a record for error.
Apparent. Error.
But yes, Your Honor, but the sufficiency of evidence is if a defendant is convicted on insufficient evidence, you have a constitutional violation because the Fifth and 14th Amendment, Jackson versus Virginia, for example, have all told us that you cannot be convicted on insufficient evidence. So you have a constitutional error, all right, and the outcome would have been otherwise. Because by definition, if the evidence was insufficient, you have a constitutional error, and instead of being guilty, he should have been not guilty. So,
but that assumes that the trial court got it wrong when he or she is sitting there and listening to the words that everybody is using. Somebody's talking about two prior convictions. Somebody's talking about authenticity. There's the Rule 29 motion. The judge denies the Rule 29 motion. My concern is, how is it apparent on the face of this record that the trial court misheard all of the evidence that came in, heard the stipulation, and said, and apparently concluded, that stipulation did not just go to authenticity, it also went to identity. How is that an apparent error on the record that we have to correct under plain error? That's my concern.
Because, and I won't read it again, but at page 5 of the transcript.
Because of that word, authenticity, which the judge spoke.
No, because of the absence of the other word, identity, which was never uttered by the trial judge, never asked for by the prosecutor, never clarified. You know, prosecutors have to prove their cases, and the Constitution demands that.
Mr. Martin, if we were to reverse the Court of Appeals and to do what the prosecutor is asking us to do, we would have to do that by combing the record and saying all of this piled together gets to identity. The victim's testimony she and this defendant lived together in Columbus. Apparently, she didn't say that she was the victim in those two cases that were certified, or we wouldn't be here talking about this. But so there's scant evidence, but if we put it all together, that's what it would take to reverse the Court of Appeals, taking the language we've been talking about and taking whatever other evidence. My question to you is, if we were to do that, would we be wrong to include what defense counsel said to the jury in picking the jury in voir dire?
Your Honor, there's two parts to your question, because you would be wrong for two reasons. To answer your question first, you would be wrong for attributing evidentiary significance to questions that are asked in voir dire. The statements of counsel are not evidence, and the jury was instructed to that in that respect, as they should have been, and therefore you cannot say that a statement in voir dire is evidence, and it's not a stipulation. There's a difference. But the bigger question would be this. If you comb the record looking for ways around the issue that was presented by the state, because the state has defined the issue in this case, and this court accepted the state's proposition, and the state's proposition is this, that a stipulation to authenticity as a matter of law means there's also a stipulation to identity. They talk about that at the bottom of page 8 into page 9 of their brief. No further proof was required, says the state in their brief. Now, if you turn around, if the court does turn around, I'm not saying you don't have the power to do that, but what I'm suggesting is that you would violate your established precedent that you, unlike the 8th District, are not a court of error review. You are not sitting as the 8th District 3-judge panel on a motion for reconsideration of, hey, your honors, would you look at this? Your jurisdiction was accepted and chosen to be exercised on a discrete issue. If you establish a precedent that says, even though the state raised this issue, we are going to reverse in a different manner from what they have asked, then you penalize those litigants who stay within the arguments of their selected propositions of law, and you open a floodgate to saying to litigants in the future, if you raise a proposition of law, you will get a more plenary review than that which we have granted. And at that point, your words in the past will not mean what they said.
And thank you, Mr.
The,
Martin.
The statute, I just want to make sure, you're referring to B1 of 294575, which has the 2 points, talks about the certified copy, and it also talks about evidence sufficient to identify the defendant named in the entry as the offender in the case.
Your Honor, I cited it as 74. I may have been mistaken
it's
on that,
74.
But it's 75.
75B1?
Yes, 75B1. That's what we're
Thank
talking
you.
About. Thank you.
Mr. Price, you may take a minute.
Why shouldn't that statute control the outcome of this case, Mr. Price?
Well, I think one of the reasons is that this court held in State versus Gwynn that there's more than one way to enter prior convictions in the evidence.
So you don't see it as a two-part thing?
I do. And I don't think that 294575 should stand as it's written. However, that is the procedure that one has to take in the absence of a stipulation. If you stipulate it, then there's no need to go through and prove those things, because you've stipulated to that being the case. You've stipulated to those two convictions. So that's the distinction here. So I don't think that the validity of the statute is in jeopardy in any way. I think it is the way the district cited it, because they cited it as this is what the state must do, as if that's in every case. But if there's a stipulation, there's no reason that the state has to do that. In Kassler, in State versus Kassler, The court said appellant stipulated to the admission of an exhibit as a business record, and the appellant is therefore bound as to all matters of fact and law concerned in the stipulation.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Gentlemen, we will take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision. Marshall, will you call a recess?
Thank you.